Good morning, Genesis. Are you enjoying the cool off here after our scorching week of, what was it, 100 record highs? Woke up, 69, 68, something like that this morning. Beautiful, love it. Has nothing to do with my sermon, I just had to get that off my chest. So, my name is Weston. And Mike lets me relieve him, you know, every so often to preach. You know, someone asked me today, a lot of people, you know, when I wear this, you know, it looks kind of weird walking around. And they say, oh, are you preaching today? And just my visceral response is, yeah, sorry. But either I must be doing something right because Mike keeps letting me preach or he thinks I need the practice, one or the other. But I am very thankful for the opportunity to preach. And because, you know, in my background, the last, oh, I got to count now. It's like, it's coming up on like 8 years now. You know, the last 8 years, I've been, you know, really pursuing ministry, pursuing, you know, something in this capacity. I didn't always know it would look like this on a stage with a microphone, but something in ministry. You know, for a long time, I thought it would be in missions, going overseas, but then I did an internship. A while ago when I was a freshman, after my freshman year in college, did an internship with a church and just fell in love with actually pursuing to build up and edify the local church here in Eureka, here in St. Louis. And so I started to really pursue that and see, you know, what does it look like for me to do ministry? And so I continued to go to school, continued to study, majoring in, I don't even know what it's called now, religion ed, general studies in the Bible, church planting was actually part of my major as well. And so as I pursued these things, I continued to do internships, and just to get a feel for what it looks like to serve in this type of capacity and prepare myself to serve in this type of capacity. And what happened after about 3 years of doing this, I came to a place where, I mean, I was just burnt, like just way burnt out, okay? I mean, I came to a place where I was no longer enjoying, you know, when you start something new, you start something fresh, you've got that element of excitement. You know, you want to take on new challenges and you want to invest in this new venture that you're pursuing. And then after a year or two, a season goes by, it starts to become a little stale. You lose that freshness. You lose that initial excitement that you once had. And church ministry, even just over a short period of time, 2 to 3 years, I started to find myself becoming burnt out. I started to find myself becoming, I lost the excitement. I lost that drive inside of me that wanted to pursue these things. And part of the reason that happened is because my focus shifted. You know, initially when I started, it was all about edifying the church, serving the church, leading people to Christ, showing them that Christ loved them and had a plan for their life and wanted to bring them into a group of his people and that they would live for God. And there was excitement in bringing people and showing people that love. But then, if you've ever spent much time in sort of an established church, you know, we're like, what, 5 years old, coming on 6 years, something like that. You know, in the churches I was doing internships, these were churches that had been around for, you know, 50 years, 80 years, and they had a way of doing things. They had a routine. And what happens very common in churches like this, as we get older, as our church gets older, we'll probably start to gravitate towards this. As we get more established, more in a routine, you start to build programs, you start to have institutions that they just become a part of that church. And what happened is I had been a part of a churches that were so institutionalized and so programmatic that it was, you know, you're there Sunday morning, you've got a meeting Sunday afternoon, you go back Sunday night, and then, you know, the youth are going to have something after Sunday night. So you're like, you know, you're spending all day at church on Sunday, and then you're going back on Wednesday. You've got a meeting with another group, you know, some other time, and then, you know, the youth are going to go out that weekend. And it's just this constant barrage of you know, got to be at this place and do this. And my focus became more on programming for the youths, and it was just like, man, you know, I lost this somewhere between leading people to Christ and programming, over-programming, and just I shifted somehow over where this is all it was. All it was to me was just, this is the job, I get a paycheck for this, it puts me in a position of power, I get to lead a little bit, I like that, that's cool. It allows me to teach what I just learned in class. I mean, when I started teaching and preaching, there were literally times where I would take very detailed notes when I was in class because I knew that Wednesday this was going to be the message. So it allowed me to teach a little bit and, you know, I guess show off my wit, try to. So that's what it became to me. It became this this place of frustration because my focus had shifted to something that was now just burning me out, and I'm just caught in this system. And Psychology Today, this is their definition of burnout. Burnout is not a simple result of long hours. The cynicism, depression, and lethargy of burnout can occur when you're not in control of how you carry out your job and when you're working towards goals that don't resonate with you and when you lack social support. If you don't tailor your responsibilities to match your true calling or at least take a break once in a while, you could face a mountain of mental and physical health problems. Now, this is from just a secular source that is defining a common, I'm sure we've all experienced this at some point in time, where you just get stuck in this routine and it becomes just a program, it becomes a routine, it becomes something that loses its initial joy. Because, and I think they get it perfect, I really do. It's very secular the way they phrase it. When you approach this from a Christian standpoint, I think they get it really, really well. They say here, when you don't tailor your responsibilities to match your true calling. I think that's the key for why I was burning out. Because my true calling wasn't to just worry about programs. Now, I'm not saying I should have dropped all the programs, dropped all the responsibility, dropped all the stuff we were doing, and then just preach. But what happened was I completely dropped this in order to focus on the responsibilities, the programming, And so I was doing all this stuff, and it was not connected back to preaching Christ, back to loving Christ, even in my own personal life. And I have a large part to do with the burnout. And I think even though my experience is from burning out on church from a leadership standpoint, that while that's my experience that I went through a few years ago, I think a lot of us can understand that. There's a good portion of you that came from other churches, a good portion of you that came from background of going to other churches where you went for a season and then stopped. And I wonder, you think about, why did you stop going? Why did you try out a church or try out a denomination for a while and then it fell away? What happened in your life to cause you to say, okay, there was something that wasn't resonating. You go to church and you dive in, it's fresh, it's exciting, but then you start to get plugged in, we can do that here too. We can go on the programs, we can do everything, and if we disconnect that from serving Christ, from loving Christ in our lives, in our family lives, it'll lead us to this burnout feeling where we're like, okay, it's not resonating. I'm missing my true calling. And that's really what we're going to see today in Mark chapter 12, verse 38 through 44. That's going to be on your pages. There's a Bible on the end of your rows if you want to pick that up. If you don't have a Bible, feel free to take it home. That's our gift to you. But on that Bible, we will be looking at page 724, 725. And we're looking at Mark chapter 12, verse 38 through 44. Now, Mark has been building, as Mike lined out a few weeks ago, Mark has been building and he's leading us through a couple of questions. He's asked us, who is this man? This man that shows up, he's performing all of these miracles, and who is he? He's Jesus, and Jesus is the Christ. He is the Messiah. He is the one that has been promised to come and rescue and bring restoration, and that is Jesus. And the second question is, okay, but what do we mean by Messiah? We say he's the Messiah, we say he's the Christ, but What does that mean? What type of Messiah is he? And we find that he's not the Messiah that everybody wanted. He's not the Messiah that everybody was expecting. Everyone wanted the Messiah to ride on the white horse and lead a charge against Rome and set up Israel. And he says, no, I'm not coming for that purpose. That's not a part of what I'm about. I'm bringing the kingdom of God in a spiritual way now. There will be a time when I will come in power, but now I'm going to come humbly. I'm going to pay for your sins. I'm going to die on the cross so that you can have a relationship with God. And so after we see, okay, Jesus is the Messiah and this is his work. Now we're in a section where Mark says, what are you going to do? Are you going to follow the Messiah? And so we're still in this. This is our framework. This is our question. As we're reading through these last few chapters, are we going to follow Jesus? Is this the Christ? Is this the person that we are going to follow who has this work set out for us? So let's look at Mark chapter 12, verse 38 through 44. He's just been asked a bunch of questions by the Pharisees. All the religious leaders are asking him questions. And so he starts to teach. And in his teaching, he said, beware of the scribes who walk around in long robes and like greetings in the marketplaces and have the best seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at the feast. Now, some of you are thinking, okay, I don't know why that's a big deal. Let's look at this. Culturally, what's going on here? Beware of the scribes who walk around in long robes. Now, if we saw someone walk around in long robes, that would stand out to us. That would look kind of funny. We'd probably think it's a dress. You know, why is this guy wearing a dress? I don't understand this. That's weird. Well, in this culture, it's not weird, but it's the type of robe that they're wearing. They are wearing festival robes, celebratory robes. They're white. Everyone else is in colors, and they're in straight white. And so they stand out from the crowd. They like to wear clothing that is going to distinguish them. That they are going to show up and wear. The only thing I can come up with today is a suit and tie. And not just any suit and tie, okay? Because anyone can get a suit and tie at Target. I know, because I did. Anybody can do that. But I'm talking like, you know, top of the line Men's Warehouse. You know, maybe you can go better than that. You know what I mean? Let's go Armani. Am I pronouncing that right? Okay, that one. We're talking, you can tell the difference between a cheap suit and a suit that costs $1,000, $2,000, $5,000. I mean, you can tell, you know, a difference between what these articles of clothing look like. At least I can, because I'm wearing this, $20 coat jacket, you know. And I don't like wearing them, so I'm not going to spend a bunch of money on it. Ergo, Target. So we can see when someone's really dressed up, really distinguished, we know. And I had a pastor friend who was really excited to tell me this. And I was just like, dude, you're such a dork. He was like, okay, I'm so excited to tell you this. He tells me he went to visitation to a hospital. And I was like, okay, that's awesome. That's really good work. And he goes to this visitation, and he said the nurse knew I was a pastor. He was so just pleased with himself that there's just something about his aura that this person knew he was a pastor. And I was like, yeah, it's probably because you're the only person on Saturday morning in a suit and a tie, you know, visiting the hospital, you know. I mean, you can kind of tell, you know. So that's kind of my equivalent for today's culture, something that would just really distinguish. If someone walked in here with a suit and a tie, and they just, maybe they had glasses, that makes people look smarter. And they looked really put together. They were well-spoken. That would distinguish themselves from us. Not that we're not well-spoken, but none of us is in a suit and a tie, you know. There's something about this person who they walk in and everyone just kind of looks, and you know that they are kind of dressed at a different level for a different occasion than the rest of us. And that's what's going on here, is these people, they like to go out into the marketplace amongst the common folk, and they put on just their best, most expensive, most celebratory festival robe just out in the middle of the marketplace. And everyone turns because you know who this is. This is the scribe. This is the person of importance. This is the person who knows the Bible. This is the person we envy, okay? The Israelites, they looked at this, and this was their top of the line. You know, most of us are like, man, if I could just play sports and get in the NBA or NFL, if I could just, you know, have something cool like that or be in a band, people would look at me and recognize me. This was their rock star, okay? This is who they looked at and said, that guy is awesome, okay? This is their Ron Burgundy. And so this guy steps out, and they've got this long robe that you can tell them, and it says they like greetings in the marketplace. Now, Jesus is not saying, it's bad to greet people, you know. But what's happening is that this type of greeting, they show up, everyone turns around, and everyone, that they're busy doing stuff, toiling, they're in the marketplace, they're selling, exchanging stuff, and what they do is they all stand up and greet this person. You know, they stand up and recognize, it's a way of honor. You know, when the judge all rise, everyone has to stand up to show respect. It's that type of greeting where this individual who's wearing this robe and is in this position of the scribe or the spiritual leader, they walk onto the scene, and everyone pays their respects, you know, either a bow or, you know, they rise to greet him and show their respects. He says, beware of these people that like this, that like to be shown this respect for their position as scribe. Beware of them. They like these long robes. They like these greetings in the marketplace. They have the best seats in the synagogue. They sit in front of the altar, and basically, you know, everyone will go and sit, and they'll have some teachers. They'll be off on the side, but these are the guys that are right up front. These are the people who like to be up front and like to be teaching. Okay, this is something that I have to be very mindful of. This is something that your elders have to be mindful of, is that there is a teaching here that Jesus is saying, watch out for these people who really enjoy this position of power, who really enjoy this position of teaching. And they have the best seats in the synagogues, they have the places of honor at the feast. So they are given a lot of respect. They are given a lot of privileges. And then it says, who devour widows' houses for a pretense, making long prayers, they will receive the greater condemnation. They go out and they... This devour widow's house, this is like our saying, he's eating me out of house and home. I'm showing this person hospitality, and they are taking advantage of it. See, scribes and Pharisees and these religious leaders, they're supposed to live a very humble life. They're supposed to live a life that is dependent upon the gifts of other people. And so what they do instead is they are basically taking more money than they need. They're using more money, and even to the point where they're taking it from widows. And so Jesus sits down opposite of the treasury, and this is where they would dump all their money. They had these, you know, 12 places they could put different money. They were assigned. They go to different functions. Some help the temple. Some pay for sacrifices. They help pay for worship. Some go to help the poor and help different projects around the city and around the temple. And so he goes opposite of this treasury. He can see where people are going and giving their offerings and giving their gifts to the temple, much like we do with tithes. And he's watching this. And he watched the people put money in the offering box. Many rich people put in large sums. And a poor widow came and put in 2 small copper coins, which make a penny. Now, what you need to notice here is Jesus knows how much money is being given. Okay, this was not something that like when we do offering, you know, we pass the plate around. It's dark enough in here. Everyone's facing forward. We're looking at the screen. We're singing while it's happening. There's enough going on that you don't really know who's given. You don't really know how much money is being given. But in their system, it was right up in public. You know, kind of like when we come down to do our Lord's Supper. We come up and we put our money in the offering. Well, everyone had this long line that they had to come to put in money into the offering. And the way the bowls were set up, they're called trumpets. It's kind of this weird system where, some people think maybe they blew a trumpet when someone gave money. I don't know if that really was what happened. That sounds too crazy. But these were these big metal bins. And so when you throw a metal coin into a metal bin, it's going to make a noise. You know, in my mind, I'm envisioning like that thing at, you used to see them in McDonald's where you put the penny in and it goes, you know. That's what I'm envisioning that is some guy just gets really good at it and he just flicks that coin in and just, and people can hear all over the temple, okay? And you know when someone gives. You know, they take a big sack out and just throw it in there and poosh, okay? And he can tell, okay, rich people are giving large sums of money. He has the, you can see that. It's just out in the open. He knows how much the widow gave. Widow gave 2 cents. He can see this. It's out in the open for everyone to see. Kind of the equivalent today would be, you know, when it comes by, plate gets passed, and I say, boom, 1,000. I don't do that, by the way. But it'd be something equivalent like that. You can tell there is money that is being given. And these wealthy people, they show up. They're, everyone knows they're wealthy. You can tell by the way they're dressed. And in the passage, these two passages are linked by the widow. You see widow in both passages, and you kind of have this large group of people, the scribes that are seeking honor and praise, and then the rich people who are seeking honor and praise through this religious system. They're seeking something other than what we would call true religion or genuine religion. They're definitely not seeking after God. There's something on the surface, superficial level that they're seeking. Recognition, honor, praise, financial gain. And we see that from how they're living their lives. And he sees this widow put in 2 copper pennies, or 2 copper coins. You know, we're talking the smallest little denomination that you can think of, basically what she is giving. And the translation of this is really weird. It says she gave, well, I'm not there yet. I'll get there. And he called his disciples to him, and he said, so he sees this happen. Widow gave 2 cents. You know, you got to be thinking, you've seen, you know, old ladies at the grocery store, and they're fumbling for change in their purse. And I see this long line of people, and they've got, you know, they're holding this sack of money. You know, they're ready to either practice their form, zipping it around the trumpet, or they're ready to take that whole sack and just throw it. They're ready to make the spectacle. I've got this money. I'm ready to throw it in the offering plate and show people that I give large sums of money. And they're sitting behind this widow just thinking, come on, grandma, like, you know, find your penny. You know, what's this, you know, two pennies, really? Like, that's what we're given? You know, I've got this sack of money. You keep your penny. Come on. And so you've got this old lady, she throws in just 2 coins. I mean, just almost worthless, you know, compared to these large sums of money. What is this going to do? It's just a couple of pennies. And really, it says, he gathers all his disciples together. And Jesus says, truly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all of those are contributing to the offering box. For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty has put in everything she had, all she has to live on. The literal translation of that says, basically she gave her life. I mean, she gave everything. When you look at this, the money she is giving is probably the money that is going to pay for her next meal. I mean, she doesn't have anything. She's living off of other people's generosity. She's living off of, maybe if she had something saved up, but she's a poor widow, so she probably doesn't have much of anything to live on. And she throws in these 2 pennies. And the translation is she gave her life. Everything she had to live on. And so the question is, how is that more? You know, how is that more? You know, Jesus said that's more than all these other people who gave large sums of money. All these other people who are paying for, they're going to pay for a huge offering. They're going to pay for, we need a new extension to the temple. We need a rec room, you know, for the youth in our temple, and we're gonna build this massive gym over on the east side, and you know they're gonna pay for building projects. They're gonna pay for the poor. They're helping. You know, some of the money they gave might even go to help this lady. They are giving these large sums of money, and Jesus says she gave more than all of them. And the reason why he's able to say that is because she gave her life. She gave everything. There was nothing that she was holding back. And when we look at religion, you know, the title of the sermon is Religion, All for Me. Is that how we define religion? I think that's how most people define religion, whether they will say that or not. And the reason why I think that's how most people define religion is because that's what the secular world thinks. When the secular world looks in at how we do religion and how we do church, how many times do you see people that look at us like, you know, it's just this inner club. It's just this club for us. It's just, what do I do to make myself feel better? What do I do about to make myself great? And this is just a system that we use to promote that. And so there are a lot of ways that we treat religion like this. But the widow, the poor widow, is commended and propped up as greater than the rest, greater than all these other people who are giving out of their abundance. They're giving money that, you know, it doesn't really affect the way they live. You know, they're giving money in a way where it's like, yeah, I've got this large sum of money, but all it's going to mean is, you know, my bank account balance is just a little bit lower. It's not going to affect the way I live. She gives in a way that affects the way she lives. She is going to be missing a meal because of this money she's giving. She is sacrificing something, her whole life even. Some even take this as sort of a projection of what Christ is going to do because of the way it's worded, that she gave her life. And Jesus is saying, this is what I'm trying to establish. I don't want to establish a system where people can give money and feel good about themselves. I want to establish a system where people not even a system, but just I want people to be devoted to me. I want people to pursue me and not this facade, not this sort of shell game that we're playing. You know, how can I make religion work for me? And there's three things I see here. The first being, I think, esteem. We can go to the next slide. Yeah. What can I gain from religion? And the first one is esteem. You know, you definitely see this in the passage. And this is what everyone's going for. How can I, you know, make myself feel better? I'm going to wear this long robe. I'm going to look distinguished. People are going to look to me and say, you are the rock star. You are the awesome guy. You're the one I want to be like. Everyone's going to greet me in the marketplace. Now, we use religion like this, too. You know, we use religion to try to make ourselves feel better. Well, you know, I lied this week, and I kind of cheated this guy out of some money at work. You know, I did this sort of shady practice. You know, I did something. I need to go to church, and I need to pay my penance. I need to do something to work off this sin. And so church is going to be my avenue that I'm going to pursue. I'm going to do something here to make myself feel better, to protect my esteem. Or maybe I'm even going to invest into a community where people can gather around me and say, oh, you're a great guy. You're a good guy. I don't just have to live a life by myself and don't have relationships. And so I'll use the relationships at church to make myself feel better. I'll go to a community group because I want a group of people to make me feel good. And what I'm saying is, that's good to have that type of community, but if that's your focus, if that's what you're getting out of religion, if you're saying, yes, I'm going to use religion, use Christianity to boost my esteem in myself, that I'm going to be first and foremost concerned with how I feel about myself, and I need that protected, I need that boosted. The other way is money. Now, some of you are thinking, how can religion give me money, because religion wants to take my money, as we've already talked about. How is that going to give me money? Well, it kind of depends. I mean, for Mike, you know, we pay Mike's salary so he can do a lot here. Someday, I will probably be in the same position where I will be paid to devote more time to a church and to teach and organize a church. And so there are positions that the church pays in order to free up an individual so they can devote their life and serve the church. But the question is, for those, you know, people on the leadership side, is it just a paycheck? You know, that's what happened to me in these internships, was it just ended up being a paycheck. And I was like, how many hours do I just have to check off in order to get this paycheck? You know, because I don't really care. You know, I'm burnt out. All I care about is this paycheck. I just need this paycheck, you know, and so I got to do X amount of hours. Let's, you know, and there is a tendency to gravitate towards that if there's nothing else pulling us to a greater cause. If there's no greater cause, it's just a country club, okay? This is just a gathering that we come together to help people feel good about each other, and then someone can profit off that. There are some religions some denominations that do teach that by coming to church, God is going to bless you. And some people might even have that in their mindset is I go to church because I want God to favor my life. And by going to church, he's going to help me get a good job. He's going to help me get a job that's going to have vacation, pay time off. I go to church because I want God to bless my health and give me some wealth. I want this type of life. And I think, church and doing something for God is going to give me this profit, give me this produce. And so there is a way where we can try to kind of treat religion, with money purposes. The other way is fame. There's opportunities for leadership. Your elders are in a place of leadership. There are people who get to show people how to do things in this church. And some people will use church to again just sort of show their fame to say, look, I'm going to be the top dog. I'm going to run this Sunday school class, this community group, this program. I need a place. And so what happens is if there's nothing greater, if there's nothing bigger, then religion is just, again, this country club, this place that we come to experience, self-esteem, or we come to hope that God will bless us and give us money, or we come that we might be able to even gain some sort of fame or, stage presence, I guess. If that's all it is, that's going to lead to burnout. Now, maybe I'm just have a weak constitution and I get burnt out easy. Maybe you can pursue those things and it doesn't burn you out. My experience is that if this is all there is, if I'm using religion to gather something else, and maybe there's something else outside of these three that you use church for. Why do you come to church? Why are you here today? What are we pursuing in gathering together, singing these songs, showing up in community groups, doing work around the city? What are we gathering from this? What are we gaining from this? And my contention today, largely relying on John Piper, is that we are going to gain something. Okay, you are going to do this because you gain something. If you don't gain anything, you wouldn't do it. Okay, and if you don't gain one of those three, what else is there? Is there a greater cause? Is there something greater that we are gaining from religion? Because if this is it, if all we are doing is pursuing these superficial things from religion, then guys, you're failing your family, you're failing your wives, you're failing your children. You're going to come to church and you're going to teach them this is church. Church is about making you feel esteemed. And they will come to church and say, well, I just come here because I need to feel good about myself, because I learned that from my parents who went to church and it wasn't real, it was just a country club. We came on Sunday and we went and then we didn't do anything with church. We came back the next Sunday. And it was just this nice little country club. We came and we felt good about each other. We lived in some community. We built some relationships. Maybe it helped us financially. Maybe it helped us in gathering some fame. But we used the system. We used church to give us something that made us feel good about ourselves. And we will pass that on. It's the best example I can think of. Okay, so Casey, my wife, is out of town this week. And she went to Colorado so she could have a nice, relaxing vacation before I start my last year of school, where I'm supposed to write, I don't know, we'll see, a thesis. And so she is going to be called upon to put in a lot of hours with the children. And while I'm downstairs, feverishly just typing away on a little screen. And so she's going on this nice vacation with her family, her mom and her sister. And so I'm left home with the girls, okay? Now, my girls are, 2.5, 9, 10 months old, 2.5 years and 10 months old. And so what ends up happening is, I want them to eat healthy. I really do. Okay, I'm a good parent, right? I want them to eat healthy. And I don't want to eat healthy, but I want them to eat healthy. Okay, I want them to eat healthy. So what happens is, we go to McDonald's because it's But, you know, McDonald's, they're really getting pretty good at this health thing. They've got some items. You can really choose some good, healthy stuff. You know, so I order a 4-piece chicken McNugget meal for my 2.5-year-old. And I was like, you know what? I feel really guilty about this. Let's order the apple slices and the milk, okay? That's pretty good, right? So chicken nugget meal, apple slices. It comes with caramel, but I hid that because I was feeling really guilty at the time. And so I've got the apple slices and the milk, and I'm like, here you go, Charlotte. She likes, you know, wants some ketchup on her. We finally taught her ketchup is not pronounced cabbage. And so she wants ketchup, and she uses that and eats her chicken McNuggets, and she has her apple slices, good healthy choice, has her milk, good healthy choice. And so I'm feeling good about myself, and then the person says, will I complete your order? No, it's not going to complete my order, because I got to get something for myself, right? So what I get is a quarter pounder with cheese. I could go double, but I'll go quarter pounder. Oh, but then I see a sign, big red sign. I don't know if you've seen this. Okay, I'm tipping you off today. There's a big red sign out these McDonald's, at least the one in Pacific, and I know I've seen it elsewhere, so I think it's like nationwide, or at least St. Louis-wide. You can go and buy a quarter pounder with cheese and get one for free. It's free. So I say, hey, I'll get a quarter pounder with cheese, and I see one's for free. I like my second one. And why don't you give me a bag of fries and a gallon of Coke, and then I'll complete my order. So I get my food, and what I'm realizing is Charlotte really likes fries. She doesn't like apple slices. She likes fries. Why does she like fries? Because I like fries. I am teaching her how to eat, okay? Now, that's kind of a, you know, superficial example, but the principle is true when it comes to religion. You will teach your kids, your family, your wife, you will teach them how to eat. You'll teach them how to eat spiritually. You'll teach them how to do church. You will teach them how to pray. You'll teach them what is most important in your life. And you'll pass that on. Your family is going to see, okay, church is just this sort of ruse, you know. We talk about Jesus as king, but, you know, that's just more rhetoric. You know, that's just something we say. We sing songs because they're catchy. They don't really have any meaning because, again, it's just this king thing isn't real. It's just surface level. And the whole reason we do this is because we want to come together and feel good about ourselves. And we will pass that on. You know, we will fail our families if we don't truly come to a point in our time or come to a point in our life where we look at Christ and say, I see the religion path. I see what I can pursue with that. But I see Christ. And I need to pursue him. Paul is going to conclude our sermon here with a passage from Philippians. And this is really the, I mean, you look at Paul, he was the rock star of all rock stars, okay? He was the, you know, Aerosmith, you know? I'm trying to date my examples here. I mean, he was the rock star of the Jewish culture. I mean, this was the guy. Everyone looked at him and said, that is the guy that, you know, I want my children to be like. That is the guy that, you know, if I could even be half of that guy, I'd be lucky. You know, he had so much accomplishments. Something like people would describe, the scholars today, they say he's got something like 2 doctorate degrees by the time he was 13. Is, you know, one of the things I've read. Basically, he knew his Bible, okay? He knew the Old Testament. He knew the laws, and he was extremely well-taught, and just he had a lot of privilege in his life and a lot of acclamation, a lot of credentials, you know, had multiple letters after his name. This was the guy that everyone looked to and said, man, that guy is the rock star. And so here's Paul writing to a church, and he describes in chapter 2, verse 4, he says, let each of you look not to his own interest, but also to the interest of others. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Jesus Christ. That's chapter 2. We are looking at chapter 3. Yes, okay. So now we'll read chapter 3. Chapter 3, verse 4, though I myself have reason for confidence in the flesh. Okay, yeah, two PhDs. I've got reason to be proud of what you see standing before you. Though I myself have reason to be confident in the flesh also, if anyone else thinks he has a reason for confidence in the flesh, I have more. Circumcised on the eighth day, which you guys don't care about, but he's a Jew. He's done all the law. He's fulfilled what the law tells him to do, and that was circumcised on the eighth day. This guy he's done this. Of the people of Israel, so he's an Israelite. Of the tribe of Benjamin, this nice special sect. He's a Hebrew of Hebrews. As to the law, a Pharisee. As to zeal, a persecutor of the church. So when it came to being the Jew of all Jews, this guy was the man. Okay, he did even to the point where when a group rose up that was against the Jewish system, he would persecute them. That is how zealous he was for his religion, and people admired that in the system. As to righteousness under the law, blameless. But whatever gain I had, I counted as loss for the sake of Christ. Indeed, I count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. For his sake, I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish in order that I might gain Christ and be found in him, having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which comes through the faith in Christ, the righteousness from God that depends on faith, that I may know him and the power of the resurrection and may share his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, that by any means possible I may attain the resurrection of the dead. He's saying all of these great accomplishments that everybody looked up to. Every Jewish person looked up to me because I was the man. That is rubbish. That's completely worthless. Everything I had gained, all of my degrees, all of my experience, all of my fame, everything that I had gained, everything that I once used to look at and say, this is what makes me awesome. This is what makes me a good person. This is what makes me a likable person. Everything that I had in my life, I count as rubbish. I count as just filth. It's not worth it anymore compared to knowing Christ, compared to obtaining Christ, pursuing Christ. And Paul gets what I think Jesus is trying to show us in this passage of pairing the widow to these rich people and these leaders, okay? These people that they're really wealthy and like to show off their spirituality through how much they give. These people that are leaders in the church who like to show off their power and their leadership through their religion, through teaching, through you know what's supposed to be serving. They are now using that to say, "Look at me! Look at my fame!" And what he's saying is, these people have robbed God. They have missed the point of pursuing God. They've missed the point. And so the question is today, are we missing the point? Are we missing what religion is supposed to be about? Are we missing what following Christ is supposed to be about? Are we missing it by making something superficial? You guys probably aren't in the burnout stage right now because we just had summer. Summer, you've got a lot of light. You get a lot of vitamin D in your system. You feel really good, okay? What happens is the fall comes, the sun hides away, winter, and everyone gets depressed, okay? Seasonal depression, some people get more than others, but that's just kind of the flow of life. And so we're coming out of summer where not a lot of people are feeling burnt out. We've done a lot of good mission projects. Some of you that are coming back from the mission projects are probably feeling really, really good. You know, you're excited, you're ready for the new year, you're ready to go into your schools and preach and teach to your friends and show them Jesus and show them this amazing work that you've done this summer, or go back to your workplace and tell people about Christ. And there's this level of excitement coming out of the summer. And then we're going to hit fall. School's going to be back in session. We're going to get into this routine. And what is going to keep us from burning out this flame that has started in the summer? And if we are just looking at making ourselves feel good and just looking at, you know, something on the surface level of religion, that any religion, and not even any system, any group of people we could go could give us, if we're just getting that, it's going to burn out. We're going to lose, because we are going to lose what our message is. Our message is that Jesus loves us, that Jesus has come and died in our place. And so the question is, who are we going to follow? We know who Jesus is, that he is a humble servant who came to die for our sin and show up to save and bring restoration to our lives and bring restoration to this world. And we know religion, what it offers. It offers us, you know, esteem. I can build a system to push me up, to build me up. Who are you going to follow? Are you going to follow Jesus? What Mark is saying is, this is Jesus. I've explained who he is. We've been going through this for about a year. I've explained to you who Jesus is. Now follow him. Now follow him where you give your life away, where you go do something absolutely insane like going to Haiti. That is insane. That is insane for someone to put themselves in harm's way, to put themselves in a culture of unease, you know, to take themselves out of their life of comfort. That's insane. But if you're only doing that to do something kind of superficial, it's not going to be worth it. But if you're doing that because you love Jesus so much that you're willing to go to the ends of the world to preach his gospel, you'll never burn out. You've got to assign your life and pull your life to Jesus in order to prevent this burnout that I experienced. And so that's my prayer for you. That's what Mark is wanting us to see today, is this poor widow had enough money for one more meal, throws it in the offering basket. And it's not just about money. We're getting ready to do offering, you know, and so I hope I see a few guys go, 1,000? Wow. I don't know if you will. But that's not what it's about. It's not just about money. Money is the example that Jesus is looking at. The take home is, how am I pursuing my life? Am I going to teach my children that this is all a ruse, that this is all just surface level and we go to feel good about ourselves? Or am I going to teach them that this is real? This is something we take from Sunday and take it into our lives during the week, and that we live for Christ with all of our lives, that we give everything because he gave everything. That is our example of how to live this life, that we give all that we have, all of our time, our thoughts, our energy, that everything is devoted to worshiping Jesus. So stand with us. We do worship Jesus here today, and we are going to, as the band comes out, we are going to sing to the God that has delivered us from sin. We're going to sing to the God that provides us so much more than esteem. Certainly he gives us esteem, but it's esteem in him. It's esteem in Christ, that everything was once rubbish, but today we are worshiping Jesus who has done so much more than we could ever do for ourselves. And he has loved us with the love of God. So let's join us in worship.